Also, just to remind everybody that anybody who's going to be in the New York area on Sukkot, you know, we'd like to invite you. How does it work? What are the days of Sukkot? Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday? Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday? So Tuesday night. So usually we do Motzai Yom Tov. And what's the timing like? Like, should we do like 9? Is that late enough for people to... 9:30? What's better? Okay, so let's say 9:30, so it's Motzai Yom Tov, and I've been told that we're guaranteed that there's not going to be any rain. You know, the weather people have been guaranteeing that. So, yeah, so that's, yeah, we'd like to everybody invite, and who's here, if you're not here, you know, you can always do what Joey does, which is he calls in, like Yehuda's doing, apparently, even as we speak. Okay. Did you have a question? No. Okay, good. Right, I wasn't sure what, you know. Okay, that's good. Yeah. So let's continue with Tura, try to say something a little bit about Nedarim, and then we'll continue with Nedarim when we come back. Okay. So we were discussing Tura. We were interested in two points, I guess, with regard to Tura. One is, again, the meta... Sefer HaMitzvos, you know, multiple, you know, formulations in the Torah idea. And the other, of course, is very specifically Tmur. So regarding the meta issue first, let's just get to that quickly. So again, I think that there are three large, you know, by and large, again, the specifics have to be addressed in each situation. I think that we've already demonstrated, even for the people who've just come, every topic has its own dynamic, and there are it's important, even, you know, certainly worthwhile, even important to consider paradigms, because issues you know, come up, and you know, it's likely that there are certain patterns in, you know, the structure of halakhic life, but it's always very critical. Again, it's a divine system. It's the Rabboni Shel Olam's Torah. So, of course, it's systematic. It's organized. It's very structured. But at the same time, you know, each category has intrinsic significance. Actually, that's our second topic, intrinsic significance, and therefore has to be judged according to its own evidence. We shouldn't... you know, universalize, you know, without being careful about giving the due to the specific issues and dynamic and relationships in each case. Well, we've seen that already in cases, even though we certainly try to do, you know, the paradigms and the patterns, but just like you can't predict a Rishon, you can't predict the topic. Anyways, having said that, so the idea of multiple formulations in the Torah about what seems to be the same issue or the same topic, but generally speaking, we can break down into three broad categories. One is what we called yesterday Gili Bilsa. So I'm just repeating pretty much what we said at the end. And there's a situation, whether it's Asay and Alav, whether it's Tu Lavin, whether it's Tu Esed, or basically the Torah adds a different pasuk or a different formulation, but the goal is merely to expand the pre-existing categories. Then we're dealing with one mechayev, one category, but Gili Milson. Again, you can still ask the question. It's legitimate to ask. It's just not always penetrable, you know, to know. Sometimes it can be, you know, good, basic, you know, reasonable speculation. In other cases, we just don't know at all. Like, why does the Torah sometimes add information, be Megala Milsa, you know, by adding a second Parsha or a second Pasuk, etc. And, you know, why is it distributed the way that it is? Why is one Pasuk, let's say, you know, Marba something, and then another formulation adds that extra bit? You know, why is the Iser Psrita or Seret Lenefesh, you know, why is it formulated somewhat differently, or why is there an emphasis on kahuna if it applies, you know, to everyone else? Again, I don't want to get too far afield, but you get the idea. But having that's an important question. But at the end of the day, the point is that we're talking about a single Iser, and the Torah has its way. I think Rishonim have different views on these questions. I've said this in the past, we talked about Divrei Sofrim, like the Bali Tosis, you know, mostly are less concerned with, you know, how limudim work, or why it is that we learn some things mefurash and some things from limudim, and some things from two limudim, and some things from one limud. Whereas my opinion, again, I think there are exceptions to that, but by and large, the Bali Tosis, you know, don't focus on that so much. They're happy, you know, to come to the conclusion that there is a certain Gili Milsa, and that this is what the system is presenting. Whereas, for example, the Rambam, in my opinion, is like hypersensitive, you know, to this question. In other words, the fact that the Torah uses a certain expression, or that something appears in a certain context, or some things are mefurish bakrud, and other things are not, or maybe it's this kind of drasha as opposed to that kind of drasha, etc. The Rambam often is hypersensitive to that and thinks that it implies, in my opinion, thinks that it implies a kind of conceptual hierarchy. Is, you know, therefore sensitive to it. But either way, that's one category. The second category, or the, let's go the other direction, the opposite direction, is that the Torah's multiple focus on a particular topic is about different dimensions or different mechayvim, different motifs within that topic. Again, there can still be different models of this. I mean, what do we mean by different mechayvim? Are they overlapping? Are they completely different? You know, how radically different? Are they subtly different? Are they, you know, they look the same but they're conceptually totally different? You know, hard to know. I'll give you one example. But I think is an example of this, in the Bali Tosis. We talked about it a couple of years ago, we learned about Matthias and Sanhedrin, the topic of Losach mode, where there's a debate whether Losach mode only applies to classic Gezel cases or not. In other words, cases where a person pressures or extracts something from someone else and he doesn't pay money. That's the view of Tosis in Bumbetziah. The Tosis in Bumbetziah says, so if that's the case, if Losachmod only applies in Gezel situations, what do you need Losachmod? You always have Losigzo. And so it says, Lav or Lebishnei Lav. So I don't think that Tosis there means that, you know, it's one idea, and the Torah expressed it in two such radically different ways. Like, you know, one under the rubric of Losigzol and the other under the rubric of Losachmod. Even though the case, you know, always overlaps, but it seems to me at least that what the Bali Tosis are saying is that even though technically the details are always the same, there's no nafkamina, getting back to that question, you know, but conceptually you violate two very different types of Yisur Lav or B'Shnei Lav, and in that context, you know, is certainly not an expansion of a single idea, because that's not expansion at all. There's no nafkamina according to that view and process. But it's not about two, it is about, you know, two mechayvim. It's not about different circumstances. So that's a great example. Now, when you have things that are more subtle, like le'achli fenu v'lo yamir, or lo yira'e v'lo yimatzei, right, the idea that these represent two different mechayvim is a lot less obvious than something like Losach mode and Losigzol, assuming that, again, the connotation of Chomed is, you know, is more, you know, what I call a Hilchos Deos type of an issue, and Losigzol is more of an economic, you know, issue. Nonetheless, just because Mechayvim are more subtle doesn't mean that they aren't different Mechayvim. So that's the second. And I was suggesting the other day that for the Rambam, certainly. Now, again, if you talk about the first category, which is the category of Gili Milsa or expansion, etc. So if I were to ask you, what do you think about Minyan Mitzvos? Now, the answer would be simple, right? Even if you're Rav Daniel Abavli, you know, you're likely, you know, not to put up much of an argument, right? You know, as if there are two or 12 or whatever it is, you know, Lavim or Isurim or Essen or some combination, if, you know, it's all, again, it's still that other question, you know, that we should be hypersensitive to, like, why did the Torah do it in this way? But that aside, you know, you wouldn't count it separately in minyan mitzvos, right? I mean, Rav Daniel Abavli did ask the question why each of the 39 avos melacha isn't count separately in minyan mitzvos. That's a legitimate question. But he never asked why each of the, let's say, 12 different parshios of Shabbos are not counted separately in minyan mitzvos, because it's clear that, you know, that part of it, partly at least, that, you know, this is not the same, not the same idea. So minyan mitzvos would be clear. As far as if it's Talmud Gili Milsa, as far as Malkus is concerned, right, so we already mentioned the debate between the Rambam and the Ramban in Shorish Tess, where the Ramban says, where the Rambam says that in order to trigger Malkus, you require what I'm calling different Mechayim, different Yanim. And the Ramban says, I don't think that's true. And he thinks that Sugin Makos is like him. Namely, even if it's just, you know, extras haros, there should be a chiyuv of multiple malchus. But I would say that even the Ramban would tell you that there's not going to be multiple malchios if we're dealing with the first category, namely the expansion of Gili Milsa. Because again, that isn't, you know, there's a very specific reason. So it isn't, you know, the Torah piling on Azaros so you can get more Malkios, you know, the Chomer Ha'inyan. It's, you know, again, for whatever reason, it's, you know, it's just a Gili Milsa. So even the Ramban would probably say, and in fact, you know, the Ramban doesn't, as far as I know, if the Ramban holds like Tosas and Chulin, and the second day like Tosas and Tmura, then the Ramban, you know, notwithstanding his comments in Shorish Tess, would not suggest that there are 80 Malkus, you know, that are consequent to Tmura. On the other hand, let's take it the other way, even the Rambam in Shorish Tess, who is the, you know, conservative with a small c there, who says you don't get multiple Malkios just because the Torah has multiple Azaros, but if you're talking about different Mechaibim, right, even subtly different Mechaibim, like Lo Yimatzei and Lo Yira'eh, then the Rambam, A, would count it a minyan of mitzvot, and B, would certainly suggest that you get double malchus as well, even in a situation where, as he does say in Sefer Mitzvot, in contrast to Kesef Mishnah, even in a situation where, you know, there are no nafkamina. Okay? As far as malchus, yeah, okay. So that's the Rambam, the Ramban, those two cases. The middle case is where the Torah has multiple formulations, right, but for the sake not of expanding, you know, the details, but also not in order to establish that what looks like one is really broken down into more than one motif, but simply l'chizuk hadavar. And again, the Rishonim, both the Rambam and the Ramban and Sefer Mitzvos, and of course many other Rishonim, you know, speak about this in quite a few other contexts. Like the Gemara many times says, you know, that there's an alav and an asay, you know, lavar lebishneim, or the two lavin, lavar lebishneim. In all cases, which of these paradigms are we talking about? But in some cases, for sure, it's l'chizuk hadavar. For example, dam, right? So the Rishonim say a lot that the reason that the Torah emphasizes dam so much is either because it's really, really chamor, or because people, you know, don't take it seriously enough, they're mezalzel in it, and therefore, you know, their perception that it's kal requires extra emphasis. But either way, whether it's intrinsically more chamor, or you have to make people aware, you know, that they have to treat it as chamor, it's l'chizuk hadavar. That's not too mechayvim, and that's not an expansion. So again, the parshios of Shabbos might relate to different motifs, probably not different mechayvim legamri that require separate binyan and mitzvos, etc. But they certainly, you know, emphasize different elements that are maybe in the integrated Shabbos, and they also serve the function of l'chizuk kadavar. So when you have something which is l'chizuk kadavar, would you count it separately in minyan mitzvos? The answer is probably not. But would you get extra malchus for it? That seems to be the debate between the Rambam and the Ramban and Shorash Tetz. So that's the reason why, if you look very carefully at the Rambam, I'm not going to read the language now because it's a little late, and say from it the Shorash Tetz and the Ramban, both of them, well, we know both of them have exceptions, you know, to their rules, and the Rambam in particular is very careful in his language to leave an opening in that regard. So for the Rambam, Bali Rabbi Matze, and, you know, for the Ramban, you may very well have what the pashtus of our Mishnah and Tmura is that Yosofei Garboim should be a problem for the Ramban. But it doesn't seem to be. We're not aware that he holds, like, you know, the more mechudash view of Tosas in Tmura number one. Right? If you don't say it, you probably don't believe it. Oh. So on both ends of the of that equation, Gebal Yerabai Matzei for the Ramban and Tmura for the Ramban, you know, maybe if it's simply Megala Milsa, we understand the exception. So this is a big question. If, as I said before, it totally parallels our discussions of counting an assay in a lav, right? And, you know, the different models there. Also different mechayim. Talk about Shabbos and Yom Tov, Yom Kippur. You might be mechalek between them, but like Shabbos, Yom Tov, and Yom Kippur, all of whom have, you know, assay and lav. So, again, you could say, you know, that the Ikar, that there's one, basically. If there is one, which one? You know, are they mostly about things you shouldn't do, or mostly about things, the way that you should spend the day and what you should focus on, which also expresses itself, or largely expresses itself, in abstaining from certain things. But, you know, that's different than not violating them. And this is what we discussed. You count... If you're only counting one, you're going to count the Aseh, you're going to count the Lav. You're going to be like the Smak, you're going to be like the, you know, Rapsajagon. If you're counting two, is that because it's L'chizuk HaDavar, but which one is Ikar? Or is it because on some level you really think that there are two different L'chay? Pashtus in the Rambam, and certainly in the Ramban, you know, I would say Pashtus in Rambam and Ramban, I'll revise that, is that, let's say, the Aseh and the Lav of Shabbos are two Mechaibin. Right? That's the famous Ramban in Parshas Emor, where the Ramban says that even Shvusim D'Rabbanon, you know, can constitute a violation of the Aseh D'Oraisa of Shabbos. Because if you turn Shabbos into Chol, or you don't make Shabbos, you know, discernibly different than Chol, even though you don't violate any of the, you know, lavin of the malacha, you still are not violating, you're still not fulfilling Shabbos. And the Rambam basically said it earlier, seemed to say it earlier, in Parakop Aleph Hilchos Shabbos Halakha. Again, I don't want to go into all that right now. Those are interesting topics. I would say both the Rambam and Ramban, you know, when the Gemara says, you know, lav arlav ba'aseyu balav, and Shabbos on Nafkuf Gedalid, they don't understand that it means l'chizuk hadavar alone. Again, whether the chizuk is the lav to the asay, or the chizuk is the asay to the lav, they really understand that, you know, lav or alav, asay or balav means there are two aspects of Shabbos. Then you could have a whole different question, just like, you know, if there was one aspect of Shabbos, you could ask which is the dominant one. If there are two aspects of Shabbos, you could still ask, you know, what is the relationship between them? Is that like a 50-50? Are they equally significant to the Kedushas Hayom? Is one more peripheral? Those are really critical and open questions, important questions. On the cusp of Yom Kippur, right, this is an interesting question about Isur Malacha on Yom Kippur. It's not saying a lot, it's an even more interesting question, which we're not going to go into now, with regard to V'nisan Es Nafshos Eicha, right, which the Torah only formulates in positive terms, where the Gemara in Yoma is Dakteala, you know, just points out, like, how do we even know that there's a lav? You know, the Rambam counts based on the Gemara of what we call, what I call a phantom lav. You know, le'ein mazhirin, ein on shenelim kein mazhirin. Since it's kares, there must be kind of an implicit azara. But it isn't Befurish Bakra. So again, there are two ways to look at that. One is that, you know, for some reason, some unfathomable, impenetrable, you know, reason, although there is a lab, the Torah doesn't write it. But the important thing is the facts and the conclusion. Right, again, I think, you know, the Rambam would tell you, and others will also tell you, that the fact that Torah Shebiktav doesn't present it that way, even though there is a law in an essay, according to the Rambam, right? But let's say, in terms of the balance, you know, that proves that the Nisim is more of a kiyum, and that the Onesh and the law is a backup of that kiyum, and there's a lot of evidence for that. So I'm just giving you as examples. Okay. So when it comes to minyan mitzvos, you know, if you have l'chizuk hadavar, that category, the middle category, I don't think you'd count it. The same thing as say aseh v'lav, and the same thing, you know, tu lavin or tu esin. By the way, lav shebeklolos, which is also the discussion in Shorash Tes, is kind of the inverse, parallel opposite of that. Right? Because lav shebeklolos is a case where you have what looks like multiple mechayvim, even separate shemos iser, right? And yet the Torah chose to present it, you know, as one. Right? Losochal al adam are different types. I don't want to get into it right now. Neighbor l'sitein mechshav, right? Maybe losasa kombalacha, or kombalacha saboda losas, if that's part of the discussion, or losa avdein, or why not, anyway. So there are different types of lav shebeklolos probably, but lav shebeklolos is the, you know, the flip side of this exact point. Not too many psukim for seemingly one idea, but, you know, too many ideas for one pasuk. Why does the Torah do it? Why does it want to generalize it? Okay. So yeah, getting back to the minyan mitzvos is one question. That's pretty clear. The Malkus is a fundamental debate. What about Lava Nita Glase? Oh. So I mentioned before that, you know, we have this Gemara in Tmura. It says that Tmura is not a Lava Nita Glase because there are two Lav. Right? And A, that seems to clash with the Gemara in Daf Pesam and Aleph in Tosus and Chulin and second day of Tosus and Tmura, would seem to say that there aren't two lavin, right? And the Rambam, as we discussed, quotes it, but also quotes a second answer, right? And this idea is omitted in Tzachim Tzadihei, where there's Bal Yerabayim Matzei in the Gemara applies lavin nitakasei. And as I mentioned, I think the Mishnah Lamelech and the Smalva Veloda and others discuss this more generally, like, do we, this Amachlok is about this klal? Is it that there are different types of two lavin, et cetera? Oh. So let's take a step, you know, let's think for a minute about applying these three models of double lavin to the question of lava vita classa. All right? Yeah. So, what do we think about that? Jonathan? We have three models of two lavin, double lavin, let's say, or multiple lavin, right? We have two mechaibin. We have gilui milsa, just to expand, just more psukim to help you figure out the details, parameters, right? Facts. And then we have a middle category where you don't need it for more facts, but you do need it for more emphasis. And now I'm asking the question, what do you think about these different models of double lavin with regard to the principle of the Gemara and Tmura, which the Gemara doesn't present as controversial, but, you know, given the fact that in Pesachim, you know, it seems to be opposed, and given the fact that the Rambam seems to have two deos, and so on and so forth, it seems like maybe it isn't so simple. Namely, that lava nita klase does not apply when there are two lava. Okay? I'm saying, what do you think about these three? There's one, basically what I'm trying to suggest is that one way to resolve some stiros may be that we're dealing with different models of two lavin. Like we said, sometimes, like, you know, Dom has multiple references, right? And on the other hand, you know, Lo Sachmor and Lo Sigzol are pretty clearly two different mechayvim, even if they cover the same territory. And then there are things in between, which are the Chizuk HaDavar. Right? So you have Gili Milsa, Chizuk HaDavar, and two mechayv. Would any of that matter to the issue of Lava Nita Klas? That's what I'm asking. Lava Nita Klas say when there are two Lav. Lava Nita Klas say classically is a case where you have a Lav, and then you have an Aseik. The Heshev is like Zeila Shagazal, Lo Sigza. Right? But in the case of Bayura, Bayimatse, and Tashbisu, or in the case of Lo Yachlifenu Velo Yamir, in Tmura, right, you have two Lavin and only one Aseik. Right? V'hoyahu Tmura so Yakodesh. So in Psachim, the Gemara is not concerned about the numbers. Right? And in Tmura, the Gemara is, right? In maybe the Rambam actually, ironically, is more for the Psachim case, and that's why he needs a different explanation why there's no Malkus, you know, in Balyura. That's ironic, right? He's applying Tmura to, if you don't hold by Rav Chaim, he's applying Tmura to Balyura, and he himself, you know, isn't so sure about it when the Gemara says it in Tmura. Like, it's strange. Right. So I'm just saying it just raises the question, as does the Mefarshim in Malva Velova and elsewhere, right? Either there's a debate about all this, or maybe it depends on the models. I'm asking you, what do you think about the models when it comes to this question?
So we commented before that when you have a lot of different classes, you have two machayim, and I understand why you would say that it would imply to having to touch the models. So I've been using classes. You two models, even though they cover one, they're not covered up.
Even though they say covers one, you're saying if there are two mechayvim, so then the Gemara in Tmura is understandable.
Yeah, the Gemara said that.
I mean, all the Gemara says is that there's no Ptur Malkus of Lav and Nita Klas A because there are two Lav. That's what the Gemara says.
Yes, I'm saying. I assume the logic is based on the fact that they may cover one, but not both at the same time. You can't cover both at the same time.
Oh, you're saying that
so
the way that that works...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying how it works.
So then why shouldn't you get Malkus for one?
You do get Malkus?
I mean, the idea of the Gemara is to explain that you would have gotten for two, but you're only getting for one? Yeah. That's how you read the Gemara?
Also, I mean, it's an interesting question what happens afterwards, but I'm assuming what Rabbi is trying to ask is that Lama Nita Klas A, what is it? What is like the mechanism that's working for this versus the two lav? Correct?
Why would lav and itaklas say ein lokan olav depend on how many lav there are? That's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
The Gemara says that it does. Rambam has sudeos. The Gemara in Pesachim seems not to be working with that idea. Meaning it's complicated. It seems like it's controversial. And now I'm wondering whether the three models that we're talking about of two lavin, right, gili milsa, chizuk advarim, and two mechayvim, whether they figure into this question. Let's make it easier on you. Let's go one at a time. Gilui milsa. If there are two lavin, let's say loyach lefenu velo yamir. If you hold like Tosas in Chulin, and the second day of Tosas in Tmura, which is, the reason you don't get Malkus, double Malkus, is because there aren't really two lavin. There's one common lav. The reason it's expressed again is to be marchiv, right, to widen the cases. So if that is true, does that work well according to the Gemara that two lavin is, it's two lavin and there's no lavin eta glase? Or is that a problem? That's what I'm asking?
It wouldn't work. It's not two lavin.
Excellent.
Really
exactly. That would be a problem. Yep. Meaning, if you say what Tosa says in Hulin, right, we'll just keep it local, then that would be a good reason, right, not to apply what the Gemara says on Dalet Obadah. Now, this would be, for Tosis, it would be a good, the way Tosis understood the Gemara in Tesamet Aleph and Tmura, it sounds like Tesamet Aleph and Tmura and Dalet Amud Aleph and Tmura, like we said, like Asher said the other day, are stira. And if you paskin like one, then you shouldn't paskin like the other, at least in this case. Because if it's all gilim, it isn't really two lavim. Technically, there are two lavim in the Torah, but it has nothing to do with lav and nita class A. There's only one lav, basically. Correct? Yeah.
What if the assay only addresses the, I guess, more limited asara, not the expansion? Could that be what the rabbi...
Well, then, if that were true, then it wouldn't be the paradigm of just gili milsa. It would be the paradigm that I suggested the other day. For I said the other day, what will you do with the Gemara in Tmura, Tesam and Aleph? We're going like this. Right now we're trying to discuss, what did Tosis and Chulin on the second day of Tosis and Tmura, what are they going to do with the Gemara and Avdalet? Because the Gemara seems to say they're too Labin, and according to them, they really aren't. The other day I was asking the question, according to the first day of Tosis and Tmura, that you're Lokesh Shmonim, right, what are you going to do with the Gemara on Tesamet Aleph? Which seems to say that the only reason that we have two Labin is to teach you Behemos Chaveira. So my answer to that question was, either like this one, they think it's a Machlokas HaSugyas, and it's noteworthy that the Rambam, for example, doesn't quote Daf Tesamet Aleph, maybe there's a stira between Dalet and Tes, right? Or I was suggesting something that I believe may be correct for many Rishonim, and that is that there's another way to read Tesamet Aleph, and that is the expansion to Chaveiro reflects a different dimension or a different emphasis, right? An additional emphasis in Tmura itself. And therefore, it applies to Chaveiro. But if you say that, then saying that it applies to Chaveiro is not tantamount to saying there aren't two Machaivim. On the contrary, the reason that it applies to Chaveiro is because there are two Machaivim. And this is what we tried to explain the other day. If the focus is on the Tmura part, on the Pidyon part, for example, then probably the Chaveiro issue is more problematic. If the issue is about the Hakdasha part, maybe that's exactly why Lo Yachlifenu as opposed to Lo Yamir. But then we're learning Tesamet Aleph not as Gili Milsa, but as Tumachayvin. And I believe that that's a very fruitful way to learn it, according to Tosis' first day of Tmura. We'll get to that in a second. What happens then with the Lav and Nitzah class? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah.
Considering that the Rav only counts
one of them, isn't it? No, so we'll get to the Rav in a minute. We'll get to the Rav in a minute. I said the Rav has less of a problem because he doesn't seem to be, he doesn't apply the Layach Lefenu over Lo Yamir. He doesn't apply the Layach Lefenu to Tesam and Aleph. I mean, the Rav is flexible in anything. He doesn't have a big problem with Tesam and Aleph because he, as far as we know, he doesn't hold that way. Right? That's Perek Aleph, whatever it is, Halakha Dalet, whatever it was. And he also doesn't have a big problem with Dalet Amud Aleph because he has two deos about it. The bigger problem the Rambam has is, like, why is this different than Baal Yirah? And there are some other problems the Rambam coming down the pike, which we'll get to in a minute, and that is Lav Shem B'Maisa. Why does it say this Oven B'Maisa? We'll get to in a second. Right? Okay. So, good. What about, so if it's Gili Milsa, as I say, it's clear that Dalet Amud base doesn't work. So any of the Gili Milsa type double lavin should not have this thing. Great. If it's two Mechaibim, that becomes tricky. Right, here's where we need, you know, military metaphors. Back in the day, we used to call in a Avigdor for that. But no one really took up the military cudgels. Maybe Josh, I don't know. Meaning, what if you have two Mechaibin? Would you say Lavanita Klase? Well, we'll make it easier. Let's say you have a Lav, two Lavin, but it's Lechazek Asadava. Okay? So then the Gemara of Dalet Amud Aleph is an interesting Gemara. Again, not Mukhrach, but very reasonable, meaning Lav Anita Klase Ein Lokin Olav applies to a regular Lav. But it doesn't necessarily apply to a super lab. And this could be said in one of two ways.
Right.
One could be the way you just said it before, which was, maybe the idea is that, you know, it knocks off, you have an essay, you have a lab, you have another lab. So the effect is, you know, if you look at it in a quantitative way, you know, you have a lab in the class A, which you're not looking for, but you have another lab. Right? So even though it's only there, lechizuk, you know, just in terms of the battle pieces, I guess, you know, you should get one mouth. This would be a way to explain, even if you held like the Ramban, that typically, even if you have one Mechayiv, right, but you have two Azharos, you should get double Malkus, right? Maybe even a Ramban view here, right, would admit that there's only one Malkus, because it's Lavan Nita Klas A. Either the Gemara says there's no Lavan Nita Klas A when there are two Lavan. Maybe what the Gemara meant was, that's how you were interpreting, right? The Shagas Aryeh says something like that. Right, we talked about Bayur Abayim Matse. The Lecha Mishnah has the same discussion in Hukos Shvisos Asar, when he talks about Ase Dochalos Ase. Ein Ase Dochalos Ase Ni Ase. Right, so he discusses there this question, a big Achronim question, that is, when we say Ein Ase Dochalos Ase Ni Ase, what do we mean? Do we mean that it's not Doch at all? Or Ase is Dochalos Ase, but then you have another Ase. I mean, now say, they neutralize each other. So similarly here, you have, does the Gemara just mean that when you have two Lavin, right, so the Nita Klas A takes away one Malkus, but if I can take away two Malkios, that's one way to explain. This is if you're talking about the Chizuk. The other way to explain it is that it doesn't, the issue is all or nothing. What we really mean to say is that when you have a battle between a regular lav, you know, and it's nita klas A, right? So that's the din. The nita klas A takes away the malchus. But when you have, you know, a fused lav, a super lav, a double lav, then the ase doesn't do anything, or doesn't do enough. Not that it neutralizes one, but you have still one standing. It's a double lav, so it's like, you know, its protection is greater. Therefore, the ase, the nitzach ase, doesn't make a dent. Right? See where the military stuff is coming from here. Right? So that's an interesting. I think those are two formulations to explain that particular sheet. Now, what? Just give me one more second. But what happened? Or maybe you wanted to say this. Is it what you wanted to say? Yeah? I knew you were going to say that, but I figured you probably really did. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask, hey.
Sure?
I was just going to ask, according to the first sheet, you could still say that you get double mock or something.
If what?
You said the first one saying that this...
Gili Milso?
No. When you have a lava in that
set, oh, you mean within the Chizuk?
Yeah. When you have a lava in the set, then you have the lava left over. Second lava left over. You could still say that you get loka doubles for that one lav because that lav comes is like modified by another lav. Even though you don't have a lav anymore, you still say like the definition of that new lav.
I think that's the same. I think it ends up being the same. I don't think you could say that, but I think you end up saying something like that according to the second way. In other words, what I'm saying is if it's just you know lav nita klas A, but there's another lav, then I think you only get one Malkus. If what we're saying is, you know, you're outnumbered, you know, because you're fighting against this colossus, you know, and therefore you're not making a dent, or maybe you're making a dent, but you're not, you know, penetrating, then both of them are standing because there's strength in their numbers. You know what I mean? I think that ends up being what you were just saying now, but I think they really are different. Okay, now what if there are two different mechaibim? So that is getting back to the military metaphor, that I think is a really interesting open question. Because here, you basically have two fronts. In other words, when you have two lavin that are hyphenated, meaning they're really one, they're just a double lav, like a super, you know, it's a super lav. You know, so then the idea that they're integrated, and therefore, you know, the defensive posture is, if they don't even, it's like, you know, if you have, you know, if you have a quantitative or a qualitative superiority on the battlefield, you know, it's not just that, oh, so you have more pieces and therefore you win. This is true in real warfare. It's true in chess. It may be true in the game of Go, but I'm not sure. Nobody knows about the game of Go? You know about it, right? It was like a head Go championship. So they say it makes chess look like child's play. Yeah. Ancient Chinese. You dabbled in it.
Never played it.
Okay. Anyways, the meaning it's not just, oh, you have more pieces, you know, so you take your licks, you know, but you end up standing because you have more pieces. Right? This is even true in checkers. Meaning if you just have more pieces, right, your options increase to the point that all your pieces are less vulnerable. Now, if you're a poor general, you know, then you use your superiority in a crude way, and you say, well, you know, I can. If you're really, really a crude general, you know, and you only rely on your quantitative or qualitative superiority, you actually end up losing more material, right, because that's part of your, you know, your laziness. But a good general, a strategic general, knows that if he has more options and more pieces at his disposal, right, that every one of his pieces is better protected. Agree? So when you have the hyphenation lav, you know, that we're talking about only good generals here. So then you might say, well, it, you know, the Nita class A is doesn't, you know, just bounces off. Ah, but what happens when you don't have one general, or maybe you do, but let's say, you know, the greater intensity of your armor or your armor, of your, you know, your arsenal, we'll call it, right, is does it make a difference? Is it better or is it worse, you know, if it's diffused, you know, across like different assets? In other words, there's a tank battle and you have so many more tanks. Or there's a battle and you have, you know, the regular amount of tanks, but you also have aircraft. Right? Or maybe a better muscle, you have, you know, two armies. You have one unified army fighting under one commander, you know, or you have two different armies with two different commanders. So what I'm trying to say is, would it, on the one hand, you're more susceptible to divide and conquer. In other words, is the contrary force really always resisting, you know, the unified colossus? Right? Or, you know, is it really facing two different threats? You know, so from a divide and conquer point of view, you could say, well, the contrary. Lavan ditaglase b'shnei lavan, if they're two mechaibim, is just another way of saying, you know, lav hanitaglase v'od lav hanitaglase. So it should really just work. Or no. If chizuk kalav, you know, is able to protect, you know, all of its parts better, then kol shekein, you know, to mechaibin. So that's an interesting military, like it's either much better or much worse. Everybody with me? So given all of this, when we now think of the question, you know, with regard to Tmura, or with regard to Bal Yiroah, or with regard to Even asay dochalos asay via ein asay dochalos asay via asay, which is a similar question. It doesn't have to be the same, but it's a similar kind of a problem. But when we think of these questions now, right, given the different models may matter, may be very consequential. All right? Good. So now, again, in thinking, like, you know, why would people be happy or unhappy, right, with that formulation, there's just much more to think about. Good. Let's talk about Lav She'im B'Maisa. Hi. That was right about Josh. Yeah, go ahead.
So those things, if you assume that the mouths are not given in a typical love in day, because it's like the Tikkun HaLav, I was thinking that if you have Beis Lavin that really reflects Beis Mechayvin, so then maybe potentially the Lav HaNidah Gnasei like just reflects an additional component that isn't a Tikkun HaLav, but it's like something else.
I didn't catch it.
Meaning the same way we're talking about how like different mitzvahs formulated in different ways.
Different combined lavin. I'm saying the different models, where you would look at them differently in terms of this question. That's what I've been trying to say.
And
the Gili Mils is another pashut, that chizuk hadvarim, the relationship between chizuk halavin and to mechayvim, I'm saying it's complicated.
Right.
That's where I'm getting a little bit.
Yeah, but a little bit of it is just another thing we've been saying a lot in terms of the Sefer HaMitzvot question.
Right.
Is that the way something's formulated, potentially, or if it's an essay, a low essay,
yeah, for sure,
to make a difference, even if at the end of the day it's not just like a separate thing, but it reflects a different dimension.
Sure.
Like the method of Ekhani. So I'm just wondering if when we say that there's, like, let's say, Tumura, for example, especially the. Let's say, Tumura, for example. So if you have a Lav HaNitzak, the Lav HaNitzak, let's say, in Tumura, may not be a Tikkun of the Beis Lavin, in which case, it doesn't actually have, like, a regular quality of Lav HaNitzak.
I mean, you're saying because it's different, you're saying something else now, and that is a Tumura. Tumura is not a typical Tikkun Nitzak Lasei anyway.
Which is what, when we say Lav HaNitzak, it's like Shlosha Lavin. Or what I'm trying to use Tumura as an example for...
Tumura is complicated. If this is all you're saying, so let's get to that point, and we made it yesterday, and we'll go back
so
to it.
About and then too. I
you're saying what?
I would say it about other things too. I just think it's the easiest way to.
No, I'm just saying Tumura. The part of the story of Tumura. So far, we're in this analysis. We're not relating to another fact, which is the fact I'm going to bring up now, but which we discussed a little bit yesterday, and that is that this Nita Klase it seems like an atypical Nita Klase. Is that what you're trying to say?
All I'm adding,
you think, forget about that.
The one clue I'm adding to that, no, that's, I'm saying all of that, but I'm adding one more thing, which is, if what we're dealing with is that there are Beis Lavin, it's not a regular Lavin and an Nita Klase, it's possible that the Beis Lavin itself already reflects and can help you predict that the Nita Klase part will be different than a regular...
Not because of forces,
right,
et cetera, but because, like, why is there in this particular... case, so that's another factor you're asking. You're saying, does the fact that there is two lavin here,
and
in addition to what the two lavin themselves bring to the table, does that also show that it's maybe a different kind of... I think the answer is yes, but it doesn't sound in the Gemara like that's a factor. But I hear it. Okay. Yeah. Possibly. Again, I'm not sure why one would... You could say that. I just don't see why one would think that the default is that a normal lav would require two, and that a single lav is weaker. I mean, what would be the... You
well,
could say it. I just don't... What would be the impetus?
When referring to lav,
yeah.
In contrast to the lav called a normal lav, a lav gomor, and a lav nitik seemingly like a lav called...
Right, so I'll tell you what I think that means. But this is going to just like throw a little bit of a complication into things. And I like to keep it simple. I think there is another element in Lav HaNitzak Lasei, which also can be relevant here, even though this isn't a classic Nitzak Lasei. And that is, I think you can make the case that Lav HaNitzak Lasei, this depends on the sugya of Bitlo, below Bitlo, and... Makos a little bit, which I'm definitely not getting into right now, and maybe another time. But and I think there are different Bhavanita classes, but one could make the case perhaps that you know, we'll talk about Ola a little bit later, like on Daf Hey. But one could make the case that a Lavanita Glase is a lot like, or a Lav Shem B'Maisa. Okay. Which I mean, typically the way we understand Lavanita Glase is that the Ase is metaking the Lav. Right? And that's why we're discussing it. What if there are two Lav in, and what if it's a stronger Lav, and, you know, does it knock out parts, does it just, you know, bounce off harmlessly, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? There are some sugyas which make it seem, and Binyamin is correct, one of them, that when you have a lava-nita klase, the problem is that the lava-nita klase reflects that the lava is weaker. That's what you're suggesting. But not because, in my opinion, in general, when you have only one lava, that makes it weak. But when you have particularly a denita klase, isn't just a force arrayed against it, which therefore makes a dent in its severity or whatever, but the fact that there is a nita klase indicates that the lav is more conditional or is deficient. Now let me explain. Meaning, again, this depends on the sugya bitlo kimo velo kimo in Makos, but according to some perspective, what you could say is that you can't violate this lav fully in its own right. You can only violate it if you also negate the possibility of doing the assay. So in a way, the lab is not a standalone. It's not complete. It's lacking something. In that sense, it's like a lab shame b'mais. Like, what's the problem of shame b'mais? That's also a question, right? Meaning, is it just that you didn't do it b'kum b'assay, or is it some shear in the lab, right? So in a way, a lav anita klase is all. Every lav anita klase is kind of a lav shein b'maisa, because in order to violate, it requires some other factor. Now, instead of looking at the tikkun as a kind of a tikkun, like you violated the lav, that's very severe, but there's a tikkun, and therefore that cuts into your onesh or your malchus. The way to look at it is the fact that there's a tikkun in this lav. Right, downgrades a lot. Let's say Geza. Right, it's true that the Maisa Gzela is a terrible action, but since there is a possibility of the Heshev, it's like Zela Asher Gazal. Right, so you not only have to take the money, but you have to keep it or refuse to pay it, right, in order to fully violate. And therefore, it's a lav kolosh or it's a lav she'ena gomer. But not because per se. You know, two lavin is the gold standard, you know, for what constitutes a lav. That I find peculiar. Okay? Now that'll help a little bit with this lavinita klase. Two, in that again, when it comes to tsmura, as I said, the whole problem is that in every other lavinita klase that we're familiar with, right, is some sort of a tikkun and some sort of an action. Right? The heishiv is like zeilash or gazal. You send away the kansipon, you know, etc. Here, seemingly, you're not doing anything. You know, you tried to do what you tried to do, but the Torah says, v'hayu u't v'raso yekodesh. So it's strange to call that lavanita glatzani. So the Achronim in Tmur discuss it. They're troubled by it. I'll explain in a minute one partly of an explanation for it. But maybe the idea is that it isn't a typical lavanita glase, but like a lavanita glase, right, the fact that, you know, the result, right, ends up being partially, you know, opposite of what you wanted, because what you tried to do here was one of two related things. Let's go to the rest of the discussion we started yesterday. Meaning, you try to kind of neutralize the din of, you know, there's no pigeon for conditions like both, and you try to do a backdoor, hakadasha. Okay, now, your real goal was tmura or chiluf or both. Meaning, either you want it to, to create chulin out of kodesh, or you want it in this strange way to be machlif and to create, you know, kodesh out of chulin, you know. But you certainly, you know, didn't do this in order to end up with double kedusha. So when the Torah said v'hoyahu t'mraso yeh kodesh as a knas doraisa, or I think maybe as a knas doraisa, or maybe as a boomerang, I'll explain that better in a second, a boomerang which really gives belies what you tried to do. Yeah, let's find out. What did you try to do? You tried to relativize kedushas haguf, right? To deny its intrinsic status. Because you have something which is Kadosh Kedusha Saguf. You can't be poded, that's the whole point. And you figure, oh, I'll be machal. Even whether it's Rab or Tov or Tov or Ra, I think I mentioned yesterday, we don't know. The stiras are, you know, which one which. I think that's part of the story. Let's say you're totally positively motivated. Right? But it still reflects a perspective, you know, which doesn't appreciate the intrinsic status of Kedusha Saguf. Right. So what happened here was, so you tried to, in a way, attack the integrity of Kedusha. But what ended up happening was double Kedusha. Moreover, is there a kind of boomerang Kedusha? Is my suggestion, but I think there's some evidence for it. Meaning, how did the other one become poet? It sounds like, okay, you didn't, you know, the simplest way, you just say, this is Nita Classe, because, you know, in the end, it's a different kind of Nita Classe, because you didn't do anything, there's no tikkun, but the Rabbeinu Sholem made a tikkun. In the end result, you wanted to do this terrible thing, one of them, two of them, whatever it is, what ended up happening was the opposite. V'hayahu t'muraso, yeah, kodesh. Not less kedusha, more kedusha. That already is a lessening, whether you wanted to or not, of the lav. Because the severity, full severity, in that sense, it's like a lav anita klase. But maybe even more than that is what I'm calling the boomerang idea, which is your goal was to undermine kedusha, intrinsic kedusha, by neutralizing, by getting around the din of ein pitcher. Or maybe again, in all sincerity, you had a better candidate. Like you could bring this korban and you want it to be the best. You're a hevel, you know, type of religious persona. Okay, but, you know, at the time, yeah, that was the best. And now there's a better, you know, tovara rabatov. Right? But still, well, what is the implication for Kedusha Saguf? So maybe it's a boomerang thing, meaning you were motivated and are trying to relativize Kedusha Saguf, and what ended up happening is a lav anita klase. Namely, the Kedusha Saguf, when you try to neutralize it, it boomerangs and creates more Kedusha Saguf. Okay? That's my personal theory about Tzmura. I mentioned the other day, why is the Lashonos double? Im hamer yamir, right? Lo yachlifenu v'lo yamir. V'hoyahu utzmuraso yeh kodesh. Some of the Mepharshim in the Parshios talk about it. But it's very striking. The answer is because there are two things going on at the same time, like we said. If there are two Mechaivim especially, or even if there aren't two Mechaivim and they're connected, so maybe one is driving the other, whichever is driving which. Okay, but there's Lo Yamir and there's Lo Yachlifenu. Right? It's fascinating. By the way, if you get Malkus for only one, which one do you get it for? So Rashi says in Tmura Lo Yamir, but Rashi says in Babbatsiya Lo Yachlifenu. Also interesting. Anyways, but the point is that part of the double thing is because what you're doing is one thing and then Torah Spike did Pumfaker. Ellie's not around anymore, right? So I have to curb my Yiddish impulses. You tried to do one thing, and the Torah, that's the ultimate tikkun. not yours, but the Torah's. So in terms of the Chomer Halav, even without what I'm saying, it's not a typical Lava Nitak. But there, it shares something with Lava Nitak. And now with the boomerang idea, it shares even more, in a way. Because there's a real tikkun. Not just you didn't get what you wanted, and therefore the Iser isn't as bad as you intended it to be, although not because of you. That's one point. It's more than that. What happened here, the Hoya Huch Vrasa, you wanted to get a replacement by taking out the source Kedusha, which is either a source Kedusha violation or initiating Kedusha, with benefits or ulterior motives or not in its own right. Right? And what ended up happening with the boomerang was the opposite. Like we had an affirmation about Kedushas HaGuf and actually a good expression of Hakdasha, not tainted by substitute. Okay? So that, I think, is part of what's going on here. So let me just speak a little bit more about that. Let me talk about the Rambam for a minute. So part of the problem is, let's talk about Lav Shein B'Maisa for a minute. Right, so the Gemara talks about Lav Shein B'Maisa. Tzvi, in Tmura? Again, how could it be Loka for Tmura? It seems to be against the rules. Right, Lav Shein B'Maisa. Again, Lav Nita Klase, we just talked about it. Fine. What about Lav Shein B'Maisa? It should be no Malkus. What does the Gemara say? Two different Gemaras.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. What's the Gimel Amidah Aleph? Hey, go ahead. Okay, that's one way to answer the question. Okay. Okay. Good. Obviously, we don't paskin. We're not going to paskin like that one, because we do paskin that lav shein b'maisa ain lokan olav. So then, everybody should have said that there's no malchus for tmura, and no one says that. We should have gone against the mission. Okay, so that's one attempt in the Gemara, but that's not going to help us. Go ahead. Okay, so that's the second one. That's how the Rambam paskens, correct? The problem is, there's a third one. What's the third one? Well, actually, there's a fourth one, too. Gemar Bab Metzia in the Sugya of Chasama Bakal speaks about maybe Akima Svasav Havamaisa, right? But then you have to apply that to many more cases, so let's assume for a moment we're not operating with that. Okay, but the Gemara here on Dalet Amud Beis has a second idea. Go ahead. Right? The Dibura is Abid Asa? Oh, whatever. mice. Yeah, mice. Meaning what?
Meaning it's not really a lot of people mice, even though it's with your speech that I consider a mice in here.
Oh. So, why is that? What is that? Is that problematic or not? What do you think about that? Say that again? Tibur is not, Akima Spasov is not the point, but?
It's the fact that Tibur has an effect.
Oh, excellent. What's the effect? Yeah. So, what do you think about that, in light of what we're talking about? Is that really true? Has Tibur created the, and is that the lav? Oh, that's the question. If the idea here is that you're trying to be makdish this behemoth chulin in an unorthodox way, in an unacceptable way, for whatever reason, right? Only because you're benefiting from it, you know, just the notion itself of a tachlif in kedusha is unacceptable, the lack of initiative or of hakdasha, whatever those, one of those three or more. There's something wrong with this whole. So then the Gemara makes sense, correct? Because the Gemara is basically saying, yeah, but this lav is effective. Hayuhu t'maraso yakodesh. So it works. It's a lav sheish b'maisa. Right? That makes it more of a problem than being nita klase, frankly. Because that's not the nita klase, that's the bad part. That's the lav. Right? I'm saying you have these conflicting ideas on the Gemara, just like Tov V'Ra. Right? But if you hold that the idea is the focus is on the Torah, I mean on the original, on the effort of Pidyon, and it's a Knaf D'Oraisa or a boomerang or something like that, right? Then it really isn't true that it's a Savid B'Maisa. Well, it only would be true if the original was Yotzei L'Chulin, which it's not. Correct? So it bothers people, what does the Rambam say? Yisav B'maisa or Nishba Meimar Mekalas Hashem?
I don't really see it.
You got a chance yet? So all the Nosa Kalim say, why does he pass on that? That was Dalet Amud Aleph. But Dalet Amud Beis says it's Yisav B'maisa. Right, so some of them say, well, the Rambam's Lashitaso, because in the Rambam also say that it's another Chiddush. In a second view of why it's not Lav Nita Klas A, what does the Rambam say? We already discussed it. Hoodie? Because the Lav is not Shabbat Klas A. Why? Because there's a Lav when there's no Ase. What's that? What? When it doesn't generate a hakdasha, what's the case? Shutaf and Sibur. Correct. Now the chiddush of the Rambam, which isn't explicit in the Gemara, is that there's malchus in that case. The Rambam thinks that there's malchus, right? Even though there's no nita klas A. In other words, if you try to be poda, right, the kachim, the tzibur or b'shutfus with the tmura, you get malchus according to the Rambam, but there's no hakdasha, correct? So some of the Nosa Kalim say this idea, they say, oh, well obviously the Rambam doesn't hold that the reason you get malchus is because b'dibura is avid b'maisa. Right? Because if he held that, how could you get Malkus in a Shutta for a Tzibur? There's no B'dibur or Savid B'maisa. So that's Lashitaso. That's where he, again, it's hard to know which came first, but the Rambam's view of Nishva Meimer Mekalas Hashem being an exception to Hashem B'maisa is Lashitaso, that he thinks that Shutta and Tzibur are Loke without the Aseh. But I would go a step further. And that is that all this stuff is the Rambam Lashitaso, that the Ikar, Lav, is not Lo Yachlifenu, but Lo Yamir, and that the focus is on the Kedusha, not on the Chulin. I'm going to amend this a little bit just in just a second, because the Rambam doesn't think it's Bayur Abayi Matzeh, doesn't think there are two Malkus, right? Or two Minyan of Mitzvos. And what he does is Lo Yamir. And what does the Rambam say? This is a little bit, I'm not completely happy with this, but what can I do? What does the Rambam say in the very end of Hilchos Tmura? See? Because of Tamei Mitzvos, did you see it? Eitan? Zach? Yeah, that he says, which is good for our Hashkafa talk, right? He said that very strongly, about the purpose of mitzvahs, the Yashir Adeos, the Hamidos, etc., right? But what does he say particularly? Yeah?
The whole reason is to dissuade people from, or it's not because of a problem, like backing out on their
commitment
to
action. Yeah, he says, but what I don't like it about it a little bit, it takes detracts a little bit from what I was saying, and I'll bring in my other eye in the Rambam in just a second. The Rambam does seem to say that Lu Yitzuyar, you could always make sure that Hekdesh came out on top, like in terms of the Tov Bara, then it wouldn't be an Isur Tmura, correct? But since people are people and they have ulterior motives and you can't really trust them, do we need to get down for Mincha, or people could daven? What? Is that okay? So, because I do want to finish at least the Tmura piece, and then I want to say one word about the Darit. But the Rambam does, clearly the Rambam holds that the focus is on the Tmura. What I'm not so thrilled about is that the Rambam, I would have preferred that the Rambam say that there is, that Kedusha is intrinsic, and it's not subject to Pidyon no matter what. Maybe what he's saying is, in a world where you could always count on people to be idealistic and altruistic and spiritually aspirational, right? In such a world, Kedusha wouldn't have to be intrinsic. I'm even a little bit unhappy with that, to be honest. But that, I think, what he's saying. Either way, if the focus was on the Hakdasha, there's nothing to even talk about. So when the Rambam says that there's no Savit B'maisa, and that you can have a Malkus and Tmura in Shutaf and Tzibor, even when there's no Hakdasha, it's pretty clear what direction he's taking. In contrast to others who think the opposite, that the real issue is Le'ach Lifen. So let me just add a point to the Rambam, since my time's running out. It's fascinating in the Rambam, Moshe, Hilchos Tmura. Yeah, Moshe? Hilchos Tmura? First of all, at the end of Sefer Karbanos, Tmura in Vayikra is the end of Torah's Kohanim. The last halacha, before the last pasuk, is Maaser Behemah's Tmura. And a couple of psukim earlier is the real Tmura, the double formulations of the Tmura. The Chinuch, by the way, emphasizes the double lo yiyaz. He said, when Hayahu Tmurasa Yeh Kodesh, it refers to both. The Kodesh doesn't refer just to the Chulin. As you should know, the old one is reinforced with Kedusha, and the new one becomes Kodesh. That's, I think the Chinuch kind of means my boomerang theory. Anyways, the Chinuch emphasizes that the problem of Tmura is the problem of Shinui B'Kedusha. Anyways, I'll explain in a second. These are the last words of Kedusha's Karban in Vayikra. Close to the context of Pidyon, there's no Pidyon on Kedusha's Haguf, and it's kind of sandwiched in between Erchim. It's not Kedusha's Haguf, Kedusha's Zamin. In the Koteret to Hilchos Tmura, that's where Moshe comes in. What does the Rambam have? What does he count? In Hilchos Tmura, you have it? Oh, you don't have it. First of all, it's a Sefer Karbonos, not a Sefer Avoda. If it was about the Hakdasha, it probably should be in Sefer Avoda. Even Dine Pidyon are often mostly in Sefer Avoda, Zulei Mokdashin. Why is this in Sefer Karbonos? What is the Koteret to Hilchos Tmura? Yesh Beklalim Gimel Mitzvos. Who saw this? Alex? What are the three?
Yomer Behema Bevehema. Shatiya Tmura Kodesh and Hemir.
Okay, that's the Lav in the Asay. And he doesn't count two. He only counts one Lav. Okay. And the last one?
Shalom Yishana HaKadshim Mikidusha Lekdusha.
Ah. What is that doing here? Shalom Yishana HaKadshim Mikidusha Lekdusha. Hilchos Tmura is how many prakim? Four prakim. So you have four prakim and 11 halach, and 10 halachos, right? Or 10 halachos into the four, three prakim and 10 halachos that deal with Tmura. And then you have three halachos, and the last one of the three, Halacha Gimel is the last one, is the also the peroration at the end. So we'll call 2.5 halachos about Shalei Shana Mikedusha Lekedusha. If you have Kedusha Zdamim, don't turn it into Kedusha Saguf. If you have Kedusha Saguf, don't turn it into Kedusha Zdamim. What's up to Tmura? So I think the bigger idea in the Rambam is that the idea of Tmura is the respect for Kedusha, per se. That's why it's the last word in Vayikra. That's why it's in Karbonos. It's not about Avoda. It's about Kedusha's Karbon, or Kedusha's Agot. And the perfect, even though there's very little space to it, the perfect coda to Hilchos Tmura is the Iser Lishanos be Kedusha le Kedusha. You should look at Kedusha, again, in a relative way, or it's just connoting, like, you know, this is the chiyuvim you have with this particular chepsa. There's something called chepsa shel kedusha. And you have to respect the differences between types of kedusha, and you particularly have to respect kedushas haguf. Kedushas haguf and interchangeable parts are tarat disaster. Whether the interchangeable part is what you're trying to remove Kedusha from, or what you're trying to impose Kedusha on as a replacement, as a substitute, the notion of interchangeability is something that is mezalzel Kedusha, and particularly Kedusha Sagot. And therefore, not being Mishaneh, even though it's only two halachos in the very end here, we could have put it elsewhere, it actually goes to the heart and the core. The only question is, right, when you're talking about the focus on Ein Mishana, that in theory you could say it goes in two directions, right, Hachlafa and Tmura, or maybe it's a bigger idea of Tmura but then affects even Hachlafa or vice versa. But the Yesod is not necessarily one or the other, it's both. That's one of the reasons why some people think it's two Mechaibim, and other people think it's one, and then the question is which one, but it's a one with added dimensions nonetheless. One of the reasons it's improper to be Makdish in this way is for the same reason, just like a more moderate expression of the more acute idea of why you can't undo Kedushas HaGuf, even if you want to replace it with something better. It's just offensive to what Kedushas HaGuf is. That's, I think, the chinuch has in mind. That's the idea of the boomerang, and that's the idea in Tmura of this idea. And that affects also how you look at the sugya of Yavid Lomahani, the debate between Abai and Rava, but I'm not going to belabor it. Just with regard to, I just want to say one thing about Yom Kippur here, that, of course, Yom Kippur is Shabbos Shabbason. Shabbos is the first expression of Kiddushah in the Torah, and it's the paradigm expression of Kedusha for Kedusha Sazman. You see that from Parshas Emor. That's why Shabbos is the framework for the Moadim. And that's what we say in Kiddush, whatever your girsa is. Right? Tchila l'mikroi kodesh, Yom Tchila l'mikroi kodesh. Right? That's the idea. And in a way, Yom Kippur is a fascinating expression of that, because it's Shabbos Shabbason, and that gives it its own special Kedusha. It's a Kedusha that, you know, is yonate from Kedusha Shabbos, right? And there are, especially in the Rambam, strong indications of that. And at the same time, has its own independent Kedusha as Shabbos Shabbosom. And really the idea of Yom Kippur itself is the idea of aspiring to Kedusha and also understanding that it isn't a relative thing. It's not only about the commitments that you make, you know, and it's an expression which imposes upon you certain obligations of behavior, but that Kedusha is something which is intrinsic and which makes its own demands in terms of reverence and in terms of inspiring and requiring and even demanding, right, certain things. Yom Kippur is a day that particularly highlights that, the idea of Itzumo Shel Yom, the fact that it's a Yom Kodesh that is intrinsic, the day itself, as long as you don't slap the day in the face by being irreverent and by ignoring its obligations, it's the only day of the year where Itzumo, let's speak about that one here, Itzumo Shel Yom is Mechaper. That's the Kedusha Sayom has such intrinsic power that it's Mechaper. Even all She'enam Shavim. Although, again, I think that's a misleading statement, meaning, obviously, if a person was Legamre Einam Shavim, it would be hard to justify that Itzumo Shel Yom would work. That's why Gemara says in Shavuos that, again, if you're moreed against Yom Kippur, then Itzumo Shel Yom is not going to be Mechaper. So the real idea, and again, we'll maybe another time try to develop it, is that an acknowledgement of the Itzumo Shel Yom, or of the Kedusha, and everything entailed by Shabbos Shabbos on the day of Yom Kippur, is something which is inherently equivalent to a process of tshuva, or an identification with a certain lifestyle and with a certain orientation, spiritual orientation of Kulo Lashem, that we don't mean, oh, you're, you know, again, it's not, you know, Echt of Yom Kippur Mechaper doesn't work, you know, for many reasons, you know, and that's certainly one of them, you know, as well. It's not that Itzumo Shel Yom is like this magic panacea. It's, you know, acknowledging Itzumo Shel Yom, the implications of it are so powerful that they take you on a different track, you know, which doesn't even require, or which can even bypass, we'll say, the regular, typical, anyways, tremendously mechudash, you know, process, you know, of tshuva. Rishami says in Masechet Makos that the whole idea of tshuva is like a nace, or something that is seemingly unnatural, because it belies the principle of cause and effect, you know, in a moral, you know, schar ve'onesh, achrayus, you know, kind of a way. But there's this idea, according to that mandamar, that Itzumo Shel Yom is mechaper even without tshuva, and that is that acknowledging, like, the chalos of Yom Kippur and its intrinsic sanctity, and, you know, being respectful of that and serious about it, right, is itself kind of a methodology which has kapara dimensions to it. That's because, again, it's exactly the opposite of tmura. It's not like, you know, you put a price tag on, you know, you reduce you know, Kedushas HaGuf, you know, into, you know, some properties or something that is exchangeable. It's an awareness that, you know, even in physical life, that, you know, there are certain ideals and certain, you know, chalos, if you will, certain entities, right, that transcend, you know, the more transactional way, you know, that we typically deal, you know, with institutions, you know, and other things. So, in that sense, the principle of Tzmura, whether it's two Mechayim, one Mechayim, which Mechayim is the lead, is connected to the Isra of Shinui Kedusha, and in that sense, it's a Labanita Klase, or it's not a Labanita Klase, but which is, you know, Poto Yumi Malkus, but there is an Asay. The Asay is kind of the, you know, some element of the tikkun of it, for the reasons that we discussed. Okay, so let me just make one comment about Nadarim. We didn't get a chance to discuss Nadarim. There's more to say, of course, about Tzmura, but that's all we're going to do in Tzmura. I said we do a drive-by. Just on the Nadarim issue, as I said the other day, I think there really are two issues. One is the fascinating question. One is the more technical question of risk, you know, benefit, you know, spiritual risk-benefit analysis, like we said. You know, what do you gain from the siyag of Nadarim or the particular Nadarim, you know, and, you know, what additional hazards do you expose yourself to, you know, in terms of, you know, not being able to be compliant with this higher, you know, ambition that you have committed to. That's one issue. And that certainly is a major issue in all Avodas Hashem. At the same time, I think there's even a bigger issue, and that is the, you know, Ki'ilu Hikriv Bama question. And that is the question of, you know, you can call it the question of Bal Tosif and Bal Tigra, or Toras Hashem Tamima, or at least the relationship between, you know, the concentric circles of, you know, what it is that the halacha as a structure requires of you, you know, and focusing on that and, you know, excelling and aspiring, you know, within that structure, you know, as opposed to, you know, on a more individualistic plane, you know, expanding beyond it, like, you know, to fine-tune, I guess, areas where you think that you can soar, you know, spiritually in a positive way, or where you feel, you know, that you need greater restrictions, right, to make sure that you aren't niksha. And again, particularly, you know, the fascinating formulations and the dialectical approach of the Rambam, which we didn't get a chance to do. We'll pick up with that. That'll be our first topic when we get back. But again, just for a day or two, not more. Then we have to get back to the real Shita issues. But, you know, the Rambam, as I say, discusses this question. The fact that he discusses it so many times is already an indication that this is something that is nuanced and subtle and important, right? So we are going to dominate, right? We can do that? Yeah. Okay. Again, it's also where he discusses it. The end of Hilchos Adarim, the end of Hilchos Nazir, the end of Hilchos Erchin, you know, Pirush Mishnayos, Shmona Prakin, etc. This is an issue which obviously engaged his thinking, as one would imagine that it would be. It's all about, you know, the objective structure and, you know, the subjective, you know, effort to kind of calibrate your own spirituality. And that, of course, is a critical issue. So I just wanted to leave you with the thought that, as I said the other day, you know, Kol Nidre, you know, seems to be a very peculiar, or seems to have assumed a very peculiar significance, you know, in the Yom Kippur framework. Say, secular Jews, and at least I'm happy that they come and that they're moved by it. I'm not quite sure what they think about it exactly, but like, you know, Kol Nidre, like, you know, oh, are you coming to Kol Nidre? And, you know, again, the chazanos and the haunting tones and the, everything about it. So again, its background is much more prosaic, as we know. Gemara Rosh Hashanah, you know, about being Matir Neder, or, you know, before the beginning of the year. More connected to Rosh Hashanah than Yom Kippur. It doesn't sound like it's like a major issue. Rambam doesn't even mention it in this context at all. It's historically known that when there were Jewish communities that faced, you know, terrible crises, you know, and crises of identity, you know, converso type communities, etc., where, you know, the Jews had to live a certain way, or they felt they had to live a certain way, you know, externally, but, you know, their inner life was different than their external life, you know, so the whole question of Nedarim, and Ataris Nedarim, right, became a very emotional one, and that's probably the reason, factually, historically, why Kol Nidre, you know, became so associated, you know, with Yom Kippur. And that's a very good reason. You know, it's, the history of Klal Yisrael is the history of the Ribono Shel Olam's Hashgacha, and how it unfolds is never, you know, it's never something that we would dismiss. And it's part of the richness of the Sora and Halachic and the Sora life, you know, that associations built up over time based on events that happen to Jewish communities are important, and they become, you know, important, and they become part of the canon. You have to know how much, but that is a topic that interests in its own right. But I always thought that in addition to that historical aspect of it, that there could be other things as well. And I'll just mention three very quickly. So Rav Breuer, they put out a machzor of Rav Breuer in the last, like, 3-4 years ago. So, yeah, I was given a personal copy by Rav Breuer's grandson, who is, you know, the expert. So he has a very nice piece in the beginning about Kol Nidre, in which he says, like, you know, such a strange thing. Matir Neder, it sounds like we are trivializing our commitments. And the idea of Dibur, even as we stand, you know, on Yom Kippur, you know, to reinvigorate and reintensify our commitment. And what kind of people, particularly spiritual people, you know, are not held to their promises and to their commitments. So he goes on to say that, you know, the real idea behind Ataris Nedarim is really the standards and the rigor of commitment and of Dibur. And that, you know, when people trivialize that, so there has to be like a mechanism, you know, a halachic mechanism to neutralize it. You can't just ignore it. You have to undergo a process. Same time, there needs to be a process. It could be that I'm adding some things to what it says, but this is the way I understood it. There needs to be a process because of the significance of commitment and of language and of words in the world of halacha. There needs to be a mechanism, right, to neutralize it. So it's kind of a rejection of loose or foolish commitments, you know, for the sake of accentuating the importance of what words could be and what commitment needs to be. And then he goes on to say that Ataris Nedarim is like a perfect introduction to a Yom Tefillah, because what is Tefillah if not about commitment and, you know, the sensitive and careful use of language, etc. I think it's a very beautiful piece. The Rav also joined this question about, you know, Kol Nidre, and also I think had a very fascinating idea. The Rav suggested that Yom Kippur is a day of, intensifying our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, and, you know, it's a day of tchina, and basically, you know, of looking for, you know, kirachim, you know, Av al Abanim, in addition to Adon, you know, al Ha'ebed. And it's a day in which we kind of throw ourselves at the mercy of the Ribono Shel Olam based on the possibility of developing like an all-consuming, you know, intense, you know, relationship with it. I would add, you know, as I like to, that that's part of the Kula Lashem, you know, theme as well. And consequently, he said, maybe Kol Nidre struck very deep roots in Klal Yisrael, because in a way, it's a way of establishing that you cannot you can't, you know, completely immerse yourself in that relationship if you have other dependent relationships. In other words, if you have commitments to people that you are unhappy about, then that becomes an obstruction in the absolute commitment that you have to the Rabbanu Shalom. Therefore, Hataras Nedarim is like a way of clearing your record so that there are no impediments in the absoluteness of your total dependence and immersion in the Kulal Hashem relationship. Again, my words a little bit, but his idea. But I always thought, in light of this whole sugya of Tov Asher, lo tidar, even maybe mishi tidar mutashalem, both aspects of it, meaning the calculation, the cost-benefit part of the sugya, a person who's idealistic and aspirational, but, at what risk? But especially the second part, this idea of, trying, first to appreciate the homeostasis, the perfection of the system, and the balance, the idea that you can tweak that through Nedarim, and you can also, savage it, through Nedarim. That you can be bona bama, even as you can be increasing your zrizus, for mitzvahs. And especially the Rambam's perspective, in that it depends very much who the person is and what his track record is and what his motivation is, etc. That idea is, again, it's the perfect idea to initiate Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day in which we reassess, our broader commitment to the world of halakha, the cost-benefit aspect of it, but even more particularly in a broader way, it's a day in which we appreciate, the idea that there's one day a year, Achas Vashana, of Kulal Hashem, right? But that the goal of that is really to have the wider agenda of the rest of the year of Chatzi Lachem and Chatzi Lashem, namely what the halakha provides in its structure. And therefore, maybe we begin with Kol Nidre, as a way of saying that how we look at seemingly enhancing or intensifying our level of commitment is something that needs to be done with great care so that it, doesn't skip steps and it doesn't miss the goal of maximizing what the normative system itself, pretty much, provides, in the spiritually, I guess, maximalist or healthiest way. Therefore, we begin Kol Nidre, as an introduction to the day of Kol Hashem. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll daven, and then I think there's a shir afterward. Yeah. Okay. Wish everybody again a Gemar Sima Tova, and we'll send out a notice about the Sukkah. Whoever can make it, I know people have family. It's also, it's... Thank you.